When most people hear the words alien encounter, a very specific set of images typically pop into their heads. Bright lights, silver saucers, cold metal tables, uncomfortable probing.
Ooh.
Stories like this often result in years of therapy for some, years of speaking engagements for others, and, if they're lucky, an episode on a History Channel show. But every so often, there's an alien encounter story that doesn't follow the script. A story so mundane, yet so wildly unbelievable that it defies all explanations. Just an ordinary man in a boring, ordinary town on an ordinary morning who stepped outside and experienced something so deeply strange that it drew the attention of the United States Air Force at the height of the Cold War. An experience that was so baffling, so aggressively mundane, that it became one of the most unexplainable stories in UFO lore. Because Joe Simonton wasn't abducted. He wasn't probed. He didn't experience time loss. Instead, he walked away from the encounter with a souvenir. And no one, not scientists, not skeptics, not the government, has ever been able to figure out what it was or why it was given to him. Welcome to Rainy Day Rabbit Holes.
History is messy,
weird, wild, anything but boring.
We're Rainy Day Rabbit Holes.
Exploring the unhinged side of history, politics, and culture.
Let's fall down the rabbit hole.
Welcome back, rabbit holers. We are deeply into our yearly Summer of Saucers month, where we explore the unhinged and unusual from UFO lore. Hopefully you are tuning in because you enjoyed our collaborative presentation at the Tacoma McMenamins Elks Temple, where we talked about the Maury Island incident. For those new listeners, welcome, and welcome back to all of our loyal listeners. Today, not only do I have a completely unhinged UFO tale for you, I also have some very special guests. Today, the hosts of one of my favorite podcasts are back. It's Amanda and Trevin from the
Yay!
Live, Laugh,
hello,
Larceny
hello.
Podcast.
So glad to be back here. And might I add, a
I'm
summer
so
of
happy.
Saucers? Sign me up.
I'll get into that, the why and like what the Summer of Saucers is a little bit later. But yeah, every year now, our yearly tradition is the month of June is our UFO month. And it's because of a couple of things, which I'll talk about here in a bit. But yeah, I like Summer
really?
Of Saucers.
Summer of Saucy Saucers.
Saucy.
I hate to do this, but I think I don't know if I'm interested in the story. You said no probing? Ugh.
Sorry. At least not that he's admitting. Are you only in for the probing?
Generally, that's what I do. Like most things that I am a part of, it's only for the probing. It's with the expectation of probing.
We know Trevin's specific kink now. If you are not yet a fan of Live, Laugh, Larceny, you need to go check them out. Like us, they have a website that will get you everywhere you need to go, livelaughlarceny.com. So go follow them. And we also did a collaborative episode with them last year, the podcast Smackdown. It was hilarious, and Trevin applied his many audio talents and magic to it to make it even better. And you can find it on both of our feeds. So tell me, guys, what have you been up to since we last talked? What was that, October? Something like that?
That seems like forever ago. Well, I was just telling you that we are going to be going to CrimeCon. Pretty sure maybe once this has aired, it has already happened. It's going to be the end of May. So,
yeah, we're really close.
So we've just been preparing and getting ready for our live show. And yeah,
nice.
Really, that's the main thing. Anything else, Trevin? We're here another year.
Yeah,
we're here another year. You know, just outrunning the man as quick as we can. 25 was tough. 26 is getting harder. So, yeah. You know, we just keep rocking with the punches. But yeah, the live show has been the real push for us. I feel like we've upped our video game, or not video games, but our game with putting out videos. We've upped that quite a bit since then. And yeah, I felt like the live stage, I feel like I heard it calling me and I answered, but we'll see how I feel about it after we get off of the stage.
I'm really excited for you guys. That's so awesome. And Trevin, you got a couple new puppy dogs?
I do. I have October and Sammy. I got two Shelties. One's a retired show dog. One was bred to breed for show dogs. So I've got these two little show dogs that have bonded together. Aww. And they're enjoying retirement as family home dogs now.
I love it. And one of them was fairly chunky when you got her. She slimmed down a bit.
Oh, yeah. She has not only just slimmed down, like before she could hardly walk.
Aww,
it was
buddy.
So sad watching her because she would just, the legs would kind of go rubbery and she'd fall on her side.
Oh, that's so
and,
sad.
Yeah, it was like, it's so top heavy. It looked like her legs didn't work right. We found out that she had a thyroid issue. We got her active and medicated, and her coat has just bloomed. She's the softest dog I've ever felt in my life. She's just very happy. So it's been healing being able to also like give this dog a new life,
yeah,
as well as a new home too.
Oh, I love that.
She's night and day from when I met her. I mean, she acted older than my dogs who are like 12 and 13 when I first met her. And how old is she, Trevin? Like 5 or something?
Yeah, I think she's 5 or 6.
5 or 6, yeah. And now she's just running, which she could barely even walk. And now she's running and living life. And
she's
just
got
so
joy.
Cute.
I love it. I love it. And yeah. Then, Amanda, I heard an episode recently, you got a new bicycle. Are you still in love with it?
Yeah, what do you feed that thing?
Girl, did I ever. I got a new bicycle that has been honestly, a very surprising slice of joy in my life lately. And another amazing thing that kind of ties in, and this is breaking news to both of you, okay? Breaking news.
Oh.
My road got completely repaved. It is so smooth.
Ooh.
On the bike. It's amazing. Like, our whole community just got redone, and so perfect for bike riding.
I love it.
So you're taking longer bike trips now with the easier roads?
Well, when it's not like tornadoing and raining, I am. But there's been so many storms lately, so.
Yeah.
Did you find a name for it yet?
Find a what?
A name for your bicycle? Did you name her?
No, I haven't named her. That is awful. I still need to do that. Oh my God. Maybe I will put just a question. I'll do this. I'm going to put a little question box on our stories. And
yes.
I'm going to ask people.
Yes.
What should I name my bicycle?
I was thinking, okay, so in Japanese, the word for bicycle is jidensha, but you could shorten that to like Jenny. It's like jidensha. Ginny
from the block.
Or Judas.
Ginny around the block, because that's where you ride.
Oh yeah,
I kind of love that.
Ginny around the block.
Okay, it might be Jenny. Who knows?
Okay, my friends. On your show, you always open with a dreadful dilemma, which I love, and I'm not going to straight up steal it. This is where you talk about something you're struggling with or something that kind of like happened to you recently. And so in that same spirit, without completely stealing it, let's do something similar. And I'm going to call it What Really Chaps My Ass. So it's just a time for you to complain, okay? So you got to think about something that is just chapping your ass recently. It could be something somebody else is doing, something that is ongoing, something that's new. I'll start to give you time to think about it. Okay. So the thing that really chaps my ass is the dishwasher. In specific, it's the way that my husband, after 20 years of being together, 20 years of this relationship, still has not figured out how to operate a dishwasher, how to load it, what it's for, what dishes should go in there, what dishes should not go in there, how to load it so that more than 3 dishes can go on the top rack. And it does not matter how many times, you know, you've got this dishwasher that has specific slots for specific dishes. Like, here's the specific places where bowls go, and bowls are the only things that fit here. And I will open that thing up, and there will be a plate and a cup sitting there, and you open it up and the plate and the cup go like this and fly all over because it's not made for those things. He also does not quite understand how a dishwasher works and that it cleans your dishes. And we have.
You think it does.
Yeah. Yeah. Typically, that's what it's for. And the house that we bought, they had put just amazing, expensive appliances in here. So we have the Miele top of the line dishwasher. And all you have to do is scrape it and put it in, and it cleans it beautifully. But he still thinks that you have to wash your dishes before you put it in. I was like, what's the... So anyways, that's...
Hey,
that's
he's just giving the mealy a little break. It's all right.
And here's the thing. Like, is this a... Trevin, I don't want to paint all men.
Oh, the he's same used to it.
Brush.
Thank you. I would hate to get offended.
But is this a man thing? Is this a man thing where they can't figure out a dishwasher? Because my mom complains about the same thing.
What's your skill level in this department, Trevin?
I'm really glad you asked me, actually. Because I actually was thinking about making a man remark here. But I didn't want to be one of those guys that, like, judges a man. Because that's like how masculinity works. You know, you're just always putting down other people for not being a man. But I will say, how not manly of him. Because you said he doesn't know how to put the stuff in there. And from my experience, and I don't mean this in a masculine way. I just mean this in the way I've known most men in my life to operate is they're just like efficient. Like they're like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this more than once. I don't want to have to do this. I don't want to take more than one trip, blah, blah, blah. So like I was raised by a man who just like, I'm going to fit everything I can in this thing.
That's me.
Yeah. That's how I am. I'm the efficient guy who's like, do, 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 do. And then I'm like, if these bowls kind of hug, but don't hug too much, I think it can still get wet and clean on the inside of that one. And that's how I operate. So, and like my dad's the same way when he's like help somebody move or something. It's very unsafe looking the way that the back of these trucks get filled sometimes. But he's like, I don't want to take a second trip.
Right.
And so that's how I learned. So when you say that he doesn't take advantage of that space, I'm just like,
yeah.
Does he want to do the dishwasher more than once?
Well, I think what it comes down to is in our last house, it had a dishwasher that was like RV size dishwasher and it was bad dishwasher. Like you did have to clean dishes. So we just didn't use it. So we would just hand wash all our dishes. And so you could, because it was so tiny and cramped, it was really inefficient. You know, you could only fit so many things in there. And like even our plates, like our big plates, wouldn't fit in there. There was not enough room, like clearance. So it's not like they're extremely big. So I think that he was just trained by the, you know, 13 years or whatever we spent in that house with that dishwasher, that dishwashers don't dishwash.
Right.
And so he thinks that he has to spread everything out so that it can be fully like have a little shower time in there. So anyways, that's my essay on dishwashers. Okay. Thank you.
He's just got to break free from an old way of thinking.
Yes. But he is an old man. So that's not like
From my experience, a lot of old men aren't learning new lessons.
Yeah, he's 54, and I think that he's reached his learning limit when it comes to dishwashers. Okay, so moving on. Who's got a something that's chapping their ass?
Do you want to go first or me? Because I've always got something.
I'll go with this one. It's a little observation I had recently. So what's really chapping my ass, I don't really get it. And I feel like this is a corporate thing, like a corporate America thing, and I just don't like it. So what is the deal? What's the deal with these restaurants? And they're always having an employee stand out in front of the intercom. I know your intercom works, so why is there a person with a tablet out there being like, hey, what do you want? And I'm sitting here looking at a speaker and looking at them, and I'm like, well, I guess I want this, but, you know, there was a machine that did your job. And I'm not saying that machines should take everybody's jobs, but it's like, it's a hot ass day. And like, you don't need to be out here doing this. Like your life sucks. You can't like, you can do more important employee things for the company or at least just for your own comfort, not sitting out in the sun and getting a sunburn and let the intercom work. So it kind of feels like to me that maybe it's some sort of a corporate-y, like, oh, people, like, I don't know if maybe they told shareholders at one point that people are more inclined to buy something if they're looking at a human being instead of talking to a voice. But it's like, I know these restaurants' intercoms work. There's a menu here. And a lot of these people with the tablets, they're like, oh, no, you still go pay at the window. I'm like, why can't you at least take care of that part for me?
So are these at drive-through?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you talking about drive-through, like fast food restaurants specifically? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm talking about, and I don't. Maybe it's not that way up in the P&W for you, but
it made it sound like it's so fancy up here.
The it high feels fancy P&W. Compared to this hole. But every intercom. I mean, like I'm like Andy's, the ice cream, Whataburger.
I was gonna say
bunch of coffee places like that. Like, I know your intercoms still work. Like, it's one thing if it says out of order and you got somebody up there. But And for some, like some of these coffee places, like Seven Brew around here, they've got like two people stationed, but it's crazy how fast they are. And it's actually, and they have like little tables next to them with coffee stuff. Like, oh, you need a creamer, you need a sugar. It's like efficient and actually makes sense. But if your job is just to communicate and take an order, and there was your building was built with the ability to do that, I just don't see why the discomfort of having to stand with like nothing to lean on. You're just out there.
I don't know. Isn't the whole point of them, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that they don't have to just wait at the for the people at the intercom. They just like go down the line and keep it moving.
Yes.
That was my thought too. Like an In-N-Out Burger here.
But if they're not doing that and just putting a lawn chair in front of the intercom.
Standing there waiting for the next person to come to them. Yeah.
That is silly.
We were at Andy's and it was completely dead. There was nobody there. And I came around the corner and was like, hell yeah. Like I don't have to wait for anybody. And this little dude flew out of the back door and ran up to it with his little pad and was like, oh, okay, what can I get for you? And I'm like, you just ran in front of the speaker. Like you could have just pushed a button from wherever you were at. And then the second I was done, he said, oh, I went to get my card. And he said, oh, you don't pay here. You got to go at the window. And then he turned around and we were walking. I was driving beside him as we were walking and he was walking so back into the building.
That's dumb. That's real dumb.
That is silly.
The only place that does this here, there's this chain called In-N-Out Burger, and it's a West Coast only chain started in California. It's California, Arizona, and Oregon, and it's just Washington State is just getting their first one because their whole thing is about being only a certain distance from their suppliers.
They have one in Vegas too.
Oh yeah, they do have them in Vegas. I forgot. Yeah, which it's good. It's kind of one of these like cult, you know, favorite things. And their lunchtime lines are insane. There'll be 40 cars lined up. So they do the same thing. They go car to car. That way they can get the orders in and moving and get people through instead of waiting for everybody to get up to the intercom so they can order, because that's just not efficient. But if there's nobody there, that's just stupid. But
that is so silly.
I don't know. I guess this kid's getting paid his minimum wage for this.
Getting a little exercise. Yeah. But yeah, it was just so, I mean, yeah, I definitely, when it's something very like packed and there's a big line, I get it. But I feel like I've just been seeing it more even on just like restaurants at normal dinner time hours. I'm just like, why are you out here?
Trevin, you know, in an age where everything is becoming automated and we're losing our gerbs to AI, maybe you should appreciate a human face and a human touch instead of complaining about it.
I was actually just feeling empathetic because it was hot that day.
Yeah, they definitely do that here where it rains, you know, 6 months out of the year. That'd be miserable.
He's like, more robots, please.
Yeah.
Interactions, yuck.
Give me the robot with a tablet. We're in. All right, Amanda, is anything chapping your ass?
Oh, God, is it ever. I have so many dreadful dilemmas like stacked up in my phone for our show. And so I was looking through them and this one's probably like the least consequential, but it really is chapping my ass the most. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
get some chapstick on that thing.
It needs it.
Ass.
Fuck her up.
I am a reality TV lover.
Okay.
I watch a lot of reality shows. And so I feel like over the years of watching these, I kind of like know what to expect. And I notice little details that maybe like a normal reality TV person wouldn't notice. Right. And in between scenes, they will do these really corny, like not well-known songs. And as Trevin knows, whenever we watch a movie, like the music is very important to me in like movies and setting the mood and all that. But there has been this song, and you guys, I need to find it. I'm not prepared. I don't know what the name is. And I've heard it in The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, and I heard it on like two other Bravo reality shows recently. And the song, I shit you not, is like, and I just keep hearing it. In every reality, like, it's a transition song that, like, maybe it's licensed, like, it's cheap licensing for it.
That's what
or, like,
yeah.
Yeah, like it's like, but someone, whoever the girl is, I hope she's making a killing off this because I'm hearing it in every show.
Yeah, they probably paid $50,000 for the rights to that song and they're like, we're going to get our $50,000 out of this.
Truly, that's what I think it must be.
It can be but, so distracting, I mean, those like really cheap songs.
When I sang that, you guys, when I sang that, that is literally the notes and the words. Like, that's literally how it goes. I've heard it so many times that that's that is exactly the song.
Oh, I can tell. Your confidence and you're just yeah. like you knew the move and the timing, all of it.
Too many transitions using that song. Please move on.
All right. Well, let's move on to our story today. First, for you guys, I want to explain the Summer of Saucers. After the Second World War, the U.S. was deep in the Cold War. Nuclear anxiety and paranoia dominate military attention. And in 1947, UFOs caught the world's attention because of several specific incidents. Early in June of 1947, a man named Kenneth Arnold was flying his small plane near Mount Rainier, which is right here in the PNW, when he noticed several shiny boomerang-shaped objects flying in formation at speeds that didn't seem possible. When he reported his tale to a reporter, he mentioned that they skipped across the clouds like a pie plate, and the reporter wrote this up as flying saucers. And thus, that term was born right here in the Pacific Northwest.
Of course you're going to be showing off your PNW knowledge again.
And how cool we are up here. A few weeks later, a man named Harold Dahl saw six donut-shaped craft flying over his boat in the waters just off the shores of Tacoma. And this incident, named the Maury Island Incident, sparked an FBI investigation. This was also the first time the mysterious Men in Black showed up in a UFO story. So that's the origin story for the Men in Black.
I'm surprised the donuts thing never really caught on.
He said they were shaped like a donut, like round with a hole in the middle. And I cannot not see pink frosted with sprinkles flying over his boat.
Yeah, he was just hungry.
Yeah, that was. Would be me too. It's like, yeah. He's like Homer Simpson, just like donuts.
Donuts.
Moon waffles. So keep in mind, this all happened before the more famous Roswell incident, and Roswell can suck it because it wasn't the first.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. After these three incidents, UFO sightings took off and the country was engrossed in UFO lore, hence the Summer of Saucers.
Okay.
So, yeah. That's
fun.
Yeah. I think it's fun too. Now, I'm curious, are either of you believers in the UFO?
Yes. For sure.
I mean, I definitely believe that there is extraterrestrial life out there somewhere. I mean, I don't know if I believe in like saucers per se, but I mean, maybe something like the movie Arrival or something.
Yeah. Do you believe that we've had aliens visit this Earth?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Really? I mean, I'm surprised that you're so, because Trevin's always more of the skeptic than I am, but.
Well, okay. I mean, I'm not saying that I feel strongly that they have spoken to anybody here. And I'm not saying that, you know, they're like operating beneath in the shadows or anything, but I do feel like almost in the same way that, you know, some of these like really big ocean creatures or something can just kind of exist and you not even like, we not know it. And
right.
They've just learned how to keep existing without getting seen. I just wouldn't be surprised if maybe something at some point, sometime landed here, did a tiny bit of like, this is interesting, and maybe left. Or maybe it was like a living thing that sort of just breezed on through. You know, I'm not saying it was on a mission to check things out, but I mean, other alien life, you know, I could see it just sort of stumbling upon us somehow.
A mission to probe, you know?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like most missions should start
with probing instead of a handshake. I'm just like, turn around.
Gotta get probed.
This is how we say hello.
I definitely believe it. I mean, there's been so many unexplained instances that, and I'm not even talking about just the ones that have happened to only like one person. I'm talking about there's been instances that have affected like huge groups of people that like had nothing really in common except for their like location, right?
Right.
That like all experienced something crazy and unexplained that just has to be supernatural in some way. Like they were all frozen in time and all this time passed and then it jumped to another time. Or there was that one where like a bunch of people saw a woman like levitating in New York City at the same time. And they like none of them knew each other, like living across, you know, the street from each other in buildings. And but they all saw the same thing, like things like that. I'm like, there's right. got to be something.
Yeah.
I don't. Well, I was going to ask. But this is kind of a silly thing that maybe will catch your attention that maybe you'd want to look into. But I don't know if you, Neil deGrasse Tyson just came out with a new book. It's called Take Me to Your Leader, Perspectives on Your First Alien Encounter.
Huh. Ooh.
I watched an interview with him on The Daily Show. I mean, I'm not vouching that I thought it was a good interview because I honestly thought he was being kind of a goofy, silly ass the whole time. But the book is kind of... I don't know. It's like kind of sciencey and funny, but it also kind of seems like he's just showing off or like just kind of being fun about stuff. But it's like he kind of takes like studies on aliens and stuff like that and then puts it together on like, if you were going to speak to an alien, this is probably what it would be like or how it would go.
And so
it's like all silly hypothetical, but he's also kind of trying to go off of some stuff. Because when he was doing the discussion, he said like, oh, how do you think you would greet an alien, kind of like we were just talking, and he said, would you shake their hand? And he was like, why would you do that? You don't know what if that's even their hand. You might be grabbing their face or something,
right?
And so it was just like a whole thing. It's like, dude, you put a lot of thought into a hypothetical and then wrote a book, so you might find that very fun. I don't know.
As they said in Star Trek 5, not everybody keeps their genitals in the same place.
That is a great
quote. Preach.
Uh-huh. My favorite quote from a movie ever. Okay. Well, before we get into today's story, let's take a quick break to hear from some of our Out of This World sponsors. All right. Let's get into this story. Today, I'm going to tell you a strange story about an ordinary man who stepped outside his rural Wisconsin home one spring morning in 1961 and straight into the weirdest close encounter case ever taken seriously by the U.S. Air Force. Eagle River, Wisconsin isn't the kind of place where dramatic things happen. It's, well, ordinary. Some might even say boring. A sensible town filled with sensible, hardworking folks. Not fancy, not flashy, and certainly not attention-seeking. The kind of place where chickens wander down dirt roads, where you can always borrow a cup of sugar from your neighbor, and people keep their business to themselves. Joe Simonton lived just outside of town, on a modest rural property surrounded by woods. He was a plumber by trade, but raised chickens on the side, like many folks in the area. He was a middle-aged, low-key, keep-to-himself kind of guy. A little gruff, but friendly enough. An animal lover. An ex-boxer. A recently retired deputy sheriff. Definitely not the type of man who was looking to make headlines. April 18th, 1961 started like any other morning. Joe got up with the sun, went outside to feed the chickens, and came back inside to make himself breakfast. His wife was already gone at her department store job. And now here's, I'm going to pause my story real quick. Some of the sources I read said that she worked at a department store in Chicago. And I put this on the map. Eagle River is at the top of Wisconsin. And now getting to Chicago from Eagle River is 2.5 hour drive.
Ooh.
In 1961, there would have been less freeways. So that was probably a 4 hour drive. So unlikely that she worked in Chicago. But you know how these stories are. The details are always just out there, and who knows what you can believe.
Yeah.
Right. That small town, though, that reminds me of where I grew up, man. Chickens roaming, rural, as fuck, no paved streets.
Right.
Crazy.
Just kind of chickens wander wherever they want to go. And
animals of all kinds in the street. It was wild. But yeah, he doesn't seem like a guy, a typical, like, what you would think of like a, oh, I got abducted by an alien. Like, it doesn't seem like he's maybe like a conspiracy guy.
Right.
Sounds like he's kind of like just a country former sheriff guy. So that doesn't really seem like he would. Yeah.
Yeah.
The dudes in isolation, they can believe things pretty easily.
Yeah, there is that. You know, yeah, I contrast it with like the story of Travis Walton. And that's the story that, you know, the movie Fire in the Sky from the 90s?
I don't think I do.
Oh, you guys have. Okay, it's hard to find now.
Oh,
was it a made-for-TV movie?
No. It was in the theaters movie. It's just hard to find. I think it kind of bombed. You'd have to pay $3 to watch it these days. But there's this guy, Travis Walton, and we did an episode about this last year for Summer of Saucers. He was out in Flagstaff, Arizona, and he was working to clear some trees for like a fire break for the Forest Service. And he claims that he was abducted. And it was kind of the most famous abduction case in the United States. But this guy, Travis Walton, he wanted to be abducted by aliens. He talked about it with his friends. All of his families were super into UFOs. And this, a lot of people believe this was a hoax. And I'm one of the camps that thinks it was a hoax. But he was really, really into UFOs and aliens. But from what I can tell, Joe Simonton, or however we pronounce this, was just a normal guy doing, you know, country guy stuff.
Yeah. It looks like Travis Walton also had a small cameo in the movie, too.
Yes. And then he been doing speaking engagements off of this, like, 1995 encounter ever since. In fact, he will probably be at the McMinnville UFO Festival that's happening here either at the end of this month or next month in Oregon, which he usually is there. So a very ordinary man. And it was just an unremarkable, quiet morning of predictable routine. No reason to believe that by lunchtime, he will have been firmly inserted into the rich tapestry of UFO lore, including Project Blue Book. He was just cleaning up his meager breakfast dishes when he heard a strange sound. It was like knobby tires on wet pavement, which was weird because he lived on a dirt road. It wasn't super loud, just distinct and unrecognizable. So he did what anyone would do. He stepped outside to investigate. And to his great surprise, there was a flying saucer in his driveway.
Well, damn. At least I knew how to use the driveway.
Seriously.
It was a large, silvery disc-shaped object, about 12 feet high and 30 feet in diameter, gleaming brighter than chrome, hovering just off the ground. As he watched, dumbfounded, a 6-foot-high hatch opened in the side of the disc. Inside were three men. As Joe described them, they were about 5 feet tall, clean-shaven, and Italian-looking. Which I'm not quite sure isn't a sort of kind of racist comment. Maybe it was 1961.
My husband is Italian, so I feel like I can say this. Does this just mean they had a lot of body hair, or
well,
she's clean shaven? I guess on the face.
Yeah,
I don't
face
know.
Was clean shaven. They had dark hair, were human looking, and had olive complexions. And they were also wearing dark, tight-fitting turtleneck tops and knit helmets or hats of some sort.
Okay.
Yeah.
It makes me think of like the weird little cult from Dude, Where's My Car?
Well, and he also said one of them was wearing a black two-piece suit, as aliens are wont to do. But none of the clothing had visible seams or fasteners. And here's the thing is Joe never described them as aliens, always as men.
Okay.
Which was interesting.
So it's just, well, that's weird.
Yeah.
So
maybe it's people from the future coming back to the 60s.
Wow. That's an interesting.
I mean, if they look like Italians and they're wearing clothes without seams, I could see it.
Yeah.
He's like, wait a minute. Nobody's going to believe me if I said I met aliens. I'm going to have to switch it up a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, maybe.
I saw a flying saucer.
I saw a bunch
it
of
was Italians.
Italians in Eagle River. Who would believe it? We haven't seen anybody who's not white here, not completely pale ass white here in 20 years. Not since we ran the last one out of town. Sorry.
Oh my God.
I feel like that's that how my funny. Family would probably be too. Like,
well, I now believe my husband is a descendant of an alien.
There you go. Yeah, you have to tell.
Not
you have
an
to,
Italian.
Next time you see him, just look at him quietly, quizzically, like you're thinking.
Yeah.
And be like, what?
I do that every day. I'll just do it and think this now.
Are you an alien?
Like, does that mean my children are part alien? I don't know.
Sure.
Yes.
I don't know them personally, but I think all children are kind of alien. So.
True.
I mean, just look at a baby.
Exactly. True. So according to Joe, one of the men was making gestures at Joe as if he was trying to communicate. The man held up a silvery jug of some sort. Joe described it as looking like some sort of trophy. So think of like a silver trophy with a handle. And held the vessel to his mouth in a drinking motion. So Joe got the clue, took the jug, and went to his basement to get water. He noted that the vessel had no markings of any sort on it. As Joe handed the full jug of water back to the strange man, he got a better look at the interior of the craft. It was all black, with several instrument panels. One of the men was sitting at one of the panels, and strangely, the other man was standing at a flameless grill cooking pancakes.
Say what?
Okay.
In a suit, flipping pancakes in a flying saucer?
It's like a flying short order cook.
Like, wow, that's like better than DoorDash.
It's like your local diner. Yeah, can you imagine if DoorDash came to you, cooked your pancakes right outside the door and handed them to you? That'd be amazing.
I can make your backyard smell like any restaurant.
It'd be fresh too. I love it.
So Joe did what any of us might do. He made an eating gesture asking for a pancake. I mean, I do love a good pancake. So, I mean, and I'm always hungry.
I gave you water, you give me a pancake. That's crazy that he would be interested in having these space Italians pancakes.
Yeah, there might be Italian seasoning in that thing, and that would be weird. Or as my husband's family would call it, Italian.
Yeah.
I'm going to go get an Italian sandwich. But of course, this was the Back East people that also were like, yeah, I'm going to go put my keys in my shots. I got to go put on my shots. It's getting kind of hot. Anyway, the people who taught me the word mass hole.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah, that makes sense.
Anyway, all right, moving on. Pancakes, aliens. So the first alien reached over to the grill, grabbed a big handful of pancakes, and just handed them to Joe. And so Joe just stood there, hands full of hot, greasy pancakes. He said they were almost too hot to hold. And the man reached up and closed the hatch, which disappeared seamlessly into the side of the craft. Then it rose about 20 feet into the air and flew off to the south, causing a great rush of air that bent the nearby pine trees. Within about 3 seconds, it was gone from view. And while it lifted into the air, Joe noticed that the object, which was shaped like two inverted bowls on top of each other, had exhaust pipes along its edge. It left no markings in the driveway, no evidence of ever having been there, save for the piping hot pancakes in Joe's hands.
Wow, here's your pancakes. Goodbye.
Did he, is this notated anywhere? Did he enjoy them? Like, did they taste like they were from the future?
What do you think? If Trevin and Amanda, if you were Joe standing there with a handful of hot alien pancakes, what would you do? Would you eat one?
Well, I wouldn't have asked for them in the first place.
I feel like. There's so many other questions I'd be asking, not like, can I have one of those?
Yes, exactly. And like, by the way, this story is going, it keeps having a weird random twist. Like, there's not aliens. They're making pancakes. Like, I bet they're going to taste like, I don't know, like he's going to say ice cream or something like steak. Oh, the pancake tastes like steak. That's just how this guy's stuff goes.
Well, Joe did decide to try it. He took a bite of one of the still warm pancakes. And according to Joe,
might as well.
It tasted like greasy cardboard. So he must have been at Denny's. No, I'm kidding. No, no shame to Denny's. Actually, their pancakes are great. So Joe took a beat before sharing his story with local Sheriff Schroeder, who sent two deputies out to the Simonton property. They couldn't find any physical evidence of a landing. No scorch marks, no tracks, no wrecked grass. Just Joe's account and four very small pancakes. But
my God.
Sheriff Schroeder had known Joe for 14 years. And while he couldn't confirm what had happened in the yard, it was clear about one thing. Joe genuinely believed every word of what he was saying. The sheriff later said Simonton spoke calmly, sensibly, and showed no signs of making the story up. And then, just when this whole thing might have quietly died in Eagle River, there was one small piece of outside corroboration. Around the same time Joe said the saucer lifted off, an insurance agent named Savino Borgo was driving along Highway 70, about a mile from the Simonton's farm. Borgo later reported seeing a silver disc-shaped object rise into the air and fly parallel to the highway before disappearing. It wasn't proof, but it was enough to make people pause and think twice about the story.
Wait, so somebody else said they saw one?
Yeah,
the same
they
time?
Saw okay. a silver object, disc-shaped object, flying along the freeway and then disappearing.
Okay, so, and they don't know each other, these two people?
No, no.
See,
at least there's,
that's
I don't
what
have
makes
any.
Me...
He was a traveling that's insurance what... salesman, as far as I know. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that is cool. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at least it's something. But now we got to get back to those pancakes.
Yeah, like get them into a lab.
So, Joe had four of them. One he'd already taken a bite out of, that left three. And this is where things start getting passed around like evidence bags at a crime scene. Joe turned one pancake over to a local judge that he trusted named Judge Carter, a man who also vouched for Joe's honesty. Carter, clearly recognizing that this was either nothing or something that would get very strange very fast, mailed the pancake to Professor Charles Maney at the Department of Physics at Defiance College in Ohio.
Yes, get in a lab.
Yes.
Along with it, he enclosed a letter that began, "Dear Charles, the enclosed artifact is allegedly an extraterrestrial pancake. What next?"
Ooh, I love it.
You don't hear that every day.
No. In a physics lab. He's in a physics lab. He's a professor.
That would go to the top of my list.
At roughly the same time, the U.S. Air Force stepped in. Project Blue Book assigned Major Robert Friend to investigate, along with their scientific consultant, Dr. J. Allen Hynek. Does that name ring a bell for either of you?
Hynek?
Yeah.
It does sound kind of familiar, but I don't know it off the top of my head.
But Project Blue Book, that rings a bell for you, right?
Yeah, and not just Kelly's Blue Book.
This is where you price out your flying saucer.
What's the MSRP?
So, if that still sounds a little fuzzy, Blue Book was the Air Force's long-running UFO investigation program, created to figure okay. out whether reports like this were a threat to national security or something science genuinely couldn't explain. And Dr. J. Allen Hynek was their go-to, the guy sent in to talk to witnesses and make sense of the weird. Okay, so Hynek interviewed Simonton and echoed what the sheriff had already said. There was no question that Joe felt that this had been a real experience. So Hynek took possession of one of the pancakes and forwarded it to a government lab for government testing. Contrary to some later rumors, it wasn't whisked away to a secret hangar or locked in a vault next to alien bodies. It was sent somewhere a little bit more mundane, the Food and Drug Administration laboratory of the U.S. Department of Health, Education, and Welfare. Do you remember Food and Drug Administration?
Yeah.
That thing that used to actually keep our food safe until a year ago or so.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is the FDA's lab. And yes, somewhere in a federal building, a technician had to log a sample described as a wheat cake allegedly cooked aboard a flying saucer.
That's wild.
The lab.
I love that they all go to these different like places. Like they're just spread in different.
Yeah,
yeah.
We're
that's
like,
fun.
We gotta get to the bottom of these pancakes. The lab ran chemical, infrared, bacterial, and radiation tests on the pancake, and their conclusion was fairly deflating. The pancake was made of ordinary terrestrial ingredients, hydrogenated fat, starch, buckwheat hulls, soybean hulls, and wheat bran. Bacteria levels were normal. Radiation levels were normal. Nothing exotic, nothing unknown, nothing alien. So,
okay. Well, it still doesn't really disprove the flying saucer. It just means that they were using regular world ingredients.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they stopped at the local Piggly Wiggly's and got some pancake mix for buckwheat pancakes. It was just a pancake. And a third pancake ended up with NICAP, the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, who passed it along to a New York researcher named Alex Mabane. I said that very weird. Mabane.
Mabang.
And Joe, for his part, kept the last one. He said he took another small bite at some point, just to be sure. Still tasted like cardboard.
It tasted like cardboard. Yeah, whatever. I am hungry.
Just needed some butter and syrup. I feel like if this happened in today's day, okay, not back in the 1960s, not by a farmer, you know, just by any one of us in today's day. And I feel like they would just laugh us out of town. They would throw the pancakes straight away in the garbage.
Yeah.
But it seems like they took this very seriously to send it to three reputable-ish places to get it tested. That's crazy.
Well, at the time, I mean, think about it, we were still deep in the Cold War. And anything that had to do with possible threats to national security. So if we're talking like that's why like the unidentified aerial phenomena that people would report, they would investigate and take seriously, because what if it was a Soviet aircraft? So they had to investigate everything. And that's why the Air Force gets involved in all of these stories. And maybe the pancake part of it was just curiosity or just wanting to be thorough. You know, I don't know. You know, just being like, all right, let's just chase down the rest of the story and just see what it is. But anyways, my friends, that's the story of Joe Simonton or Simonton or something. And the alien pancakes, possibly the weirdest Project Blue Book case and my new personal favorite. And here's the thing. Joe maintained his story for the rest of his life and went on to say that if it happened again, he would just keep quiet about it. He never wanted any of the attention and he never sought to profit off of it. So anyway, what do you guys think? Do you think that Joe really had this encounter? Or do you think maybe he was also distilling moonshine in the shed behind his house and got into some heads and tails or something?
If there wasn't another witness, I would probably say maybe he was just on something, because I don't know. But the fact that someone else saw it and they weren't related, I don't know. And if the pancakes like actually had some weird unexplained shit in there, I would be like, yep, it's real. But because they were made with like just normal old ingredients, I don't know. This one has me kind of flip-flopping.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of it either.
I think that maybe he could have ran into a flying saucer or just some tan gentlemen who were riding around with some pancakes, had some sort of a weird flying vehicle or something. Because like,
it's like a cyber truck from the future.
Oh, God. Yeah. Can you imagine if somebody just dropped a cyber truck into 1961? They would think it was a flying saucer.
No, seriously. If some Italians were in a cyber truck, everyone would be freaking out.
You get some Cybertruck bros with an Ed Hardy shirt on.
Or if he had like a, or maybe, I guess I didn't see any tires, but they wouldn't really be looking for vehicle tires. I don't know. It just, it's asking me to suspend less disbelief because he's not so much saying that they were aliens. He's calling them men. The only thing that's really the crazy thing is that he saw a flying saucer. I mean, the pancakes are crazy too, but I'm just trying to think, like, he's not trying to say that he saw aliens. So I'm thinking, how did some men with pancakes like get to him in a shiny way? And maybe he was on Moonway or Moonway. Maybe he was on moonshine.
Moonway was the name of the mushrooms that he also grew behind the shed.
Yeah, he was chewing some Moonway. But yeah, I almost feel like maybe he misunderstood something, but I don't know, by saying that they were men and pancakes. And they should have really looked for pancake ingredients in his house to see if he had it.
And why did they have pancakes, but they desperately needed water?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. They needed the water.
Weird.
It's very,
very weird.
Yeah,
but what if it was like an RV or something, or like a really shiny RV, and
I think
he was just drunk as hell?
I think it's someone from the future. I don't think this was alien activity.
Well, you know,
I think this was time traveling humans.
I like that. Yeah,
Trevin, I actually think you're on to something. So Airstream trailers. Okay, so trailer. I was really into vintage trailers for a while, and in the night from the 1930s to like the 1970s, there was like 200 or 300 different trailer manufacturers in the United States. It became really big to have trailers. And there was Airstream. We're all familiar with Airstream trailers, right? They're the shiny metal trailers. But there was like 4 or 5 other manufacturers that made them. And they made them in all sizes. And some of them were really, really chromed out and like really, really shiny. What if Joe was drunk or high on something and somebody just rolled into his yard in a very shiny trailer and was cooking breakfast and needed some water, and he was like, and maybe they were Italian. Maybe they
or on a road trip from a place that's more sunny,
or like maybe they were somebody from out of the country that didn't speak English that was just tan, and maybe this is just a giant misunderstanding, and maybe when they left they kind of peeled out and it caused a big dust cloud, and in his inebriation he was like, yeah, they just took off over the trees.
Yeah,
I mean, that when it's whatever, either that or time traveling humans. I really think it might be they were time traveling, and all they had was pancakes, not a single drop of water, and
it's like a Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure sort of thing. Like some Italian dude bros got a hold of a time machine and stole it. And they weren't thinking. And they didn't bring supplies.
Yeah. I mean, pancake mix.
Think if like our government today discovered a time machine. It would be some dumb, stupid ass, like RFK dude bro sort of person going back in time and with pancakes.
Totally. It was Cash Patel.
Yeah, exactly. It would be a Bill and Ted situation because we live in Bill and Ted times.
Yeah. Here's the movie that nobody would watch. It would be Cash Patel and Pete Kegseth find the time machine and go back in time just to mess with people in the 60s. Right up their alley.
I could see that as a TV show.
Yeah, that's what my guess is, because I feel like aliens would be a little more advanced than making a shitty pancake.
Yeah, that seems very odd. But again, not all aliens keep their genitals in the same place, and their culinary requirements and tastes are going to be different than ours. So maybe that cardboard pancake was very delicious. But it does tell you that one thing is a galactic common, and that's breakfast.
Yes.
Love that for all of us.
Too. All right. Well, I really want to thank my friends Amanda and Trevin from the Live Laugh Larceny podcast for being my guest on this strange journey through UFO lore. And if you don't already follow them, make sure to check out their website, livelaughlarceny.com, for all their links to socials and episodes. And of course, they are on all the podcast platforms. And make sure you check out the collab we did last year. It was fantastic. Anything else that you guys want to plug?
Hey, if you have your own petty crime story, you can email us too. We love to get emails. Just livelaughlarceny at gmail.com. You can also find it on our website too. But just love doing listener stories.
Just send a letter in the mail to I forgot where you guys live again. Are you
in Kansas City,
Missouri?
Just their name, Kansas City, and send it off, and the post office will find them.
Yeah, there's no other trip anymore.
Or
and
give it to a pigeon. Yes. Maybe it'll bring it. Maybe
no, but
not.
Definitely do send in your petty crime stories. I sent in the one where I accidentally broke into an Airbnb and used their bathroom. And they did an amazing job with it. And I listened to it like 6 times because it made me laugh so hard. It was so good. So you could get the same treatment for one of your petty crime stories. They do amazing work over there. So you definitely need to check them out. All right. Thank you, guys. Go forth. get freaky with some aliens, and have a weird ass day. Thank you guys.
See ya. Thank you. Bye. Get probed.
Trevor, no, you did not.
You've been listening to Rainy Day Rabbit Holes. We thought maybe you had forgotten. How could you forget? We are your hosts, Shay
and Jody.
And you can find all things on our website, rainydayrabbitholes.com, like sources, notes, pictures, links, whatnot. That beautiful website is designed and managed by the amazing and talented Letha Davis at easybreezy.com. That's easybreezy, EASYBRZY.com. All episodes are edited and produced by me, Shay, and you can reach out with any questions or comments at shay@rainydayrabbitholes.com. That's S-H-E-A. Thanks for listening. Please share the podcast with your friends and family and stay curious.
See you down the rabbit hole.
It's Sunday morning, and that wonderfully relaxed feeling of a long, lazy day lingers in the air. If you want to make the moment last, may I suggest the perfect solution? The Martin Sheen Podcast. Join me, your host, Martin Sheen, for beautifully crafted 20-minute programs filled with never-before-heard stories of my life, along with personal reflections and poetry that inspires. The Martin Sheen Podcast is the perfect Sunday refresh, a chance to take a deep breath, relax, and know that the stress of Monday may be just around the corner, but not here, not now. So make this your weekly moment of calm as we explore faith, hope, love, and what it means to be human. And know this, this journey is ever unfolding as I invite you to see what's next with me, Martin Sheen, and thank you.